and it's called the CCW app. My wife and I both have it on our phones. It looks like this right here. This is what it looks like when you open it. When you close it, it looks like that right there, that little American flag with a handgun on it, CCW. Okay. And this thing updates regularly. You have to pay $80 a year, but it keeps you totally updated on the state law. So whenever my wife and I, because we're licensed now in 41 states, whenever we cross a state line that we're licensed in, we look up the laws. Like a lot of people think in Arizona that you can't be drinking in a bar and have a gun. That's not true. You know, that's hogwash. And you know, some people say, well, if you're drinking, you shouldn't have a gun. Well, okay, I'm drinking in my house with my wife. We're having wine with our dinner, and now somebody's breaking in. Do I have to say, hey, wait till this gets out of my system? It makes no sense. You're still responsible for your actions.
Welcome back to part two of this week's episode of Game of Crimes, Murph in the Morning. And I actually remembered the name of the show today. Yesterday, I was a little slow on the pickup there. But our guest today is, if you remember, if you saw yesterday's episode, is Barry Todd, a 21-year military veteran, U.S. Army Ranger. Those are the studs. You know, and I meant to say this yesterday, Barry, is if you want to know how tough it is to be a Ranger, go look it up. Because I've got some friends that were Rangers. I've read about Rangers. I got a good friend who's a Navy SEAL, Jason Redman. He tells the story because it's in his book, who kind of got sideways with command, and they sent him to Ranger school. And he said he had a hard time getting through, and he's already been through BUDS. So, I mean, these are the tough guys. So just ultimate respect for Barry and his service to our country here. And just to recap yesterday what we talked about, he's out of the military. He went to work for a financial advisory company. After so many years, he started his own company, a successful company, goes out with his wife and some friends for dinner and a couple drinks one night. And that's kind of where we are. He ends up getting in a tussle with an individual who just decided to be a freaking bully, is exactly what he was. That led to where was there any conversation, Barry, that, you know, that you said to him or he said to you that led to a confrontation?
Just what's in the book. To this day, nobody knows why he picked me out. I was getting along with him earlier in the evening. I don't know what turned on him, but I don't know if he didn't like the song I was singing, Frank Sinatra's My Way, on karaoke. I have no clue.
Are you a bad singer?
I don't think I am, at least not on that song. My wife always says, you do that so well. And I'm like, I don't know if she's doing that just because she loves me or what.
But, you know, I'd have to do some really bad singing to provoke a reaction like that.
But I did find out through the hiring of our investigators, what I did find out through his background, he had been like this his whole adult life. He had had many encounters with the police for fighting in bars. He would get drunk. His best friend gave us an affidavit, said, yeah, I had to move to Phoenix because he's so toxic. He wants to fight all the time. And wow. He told us a story about a time he started a fight with a guy that was from out of town who over catfish that was bigger in Yuma than it was in Georgia.
Yeah, well, something really important. That's good to know.
Yeah, I'm like, really? Yeah, I pray today that he is doing well, and that his children are doing well, and God bless him. I hope he finds peace in God, and thank God he's still alive. So it's tough.
And so, I don't want to belabor this because I want to get into some other points we're going to discuss today, but you went outside, and when I get this wrong, you correct me, but you went outside, there was a confrontation, he assaulted you, your wife and your friends are still in there, your car keys, your cell phone's still in the mm-hmm. restaurant. You go to your car and get a weapon, and this is under the Stand Your Ground laws within Arizona. You come back mm-hmm. over, you've been through training for all this, you understand what the law is, you know what the requirements are for you. Mm-hmm. You just, all you want to do is go back in the bar and retrieve your wife, your belongings, and go home.
Yes.
And I believe you said that you've been drinking a little bit. You were not intoxicated. Is that right?
Correct. They did a blood test on me within 2 hours. I was a 0.07 or a 0.08. I was drinking, 12 ounce of Miller Lights, and I had 5 over 6 hours.
Yeah. I recall, whenever you would drink, your wife would not drink, and she would always drive.
Yep. Matter of fact, I had to get the car keys from her to get to Copenhagen out of my car. That's the reason I went to my car, went outside in the first place.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So I missed that part. I remember reading it now that you refreshed my memory.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and what started it, I don't know. It started inside. He threatened me inside a couple of times. He climbed, when I got done singing the karaoke song, he had climbed up on stage and literally got within 1 or 2 inches from my nose. I mean, you've seen guys that do that. They get up in your face like that. That's right. Exactly what he did to me. And I'm like, dude, you need to back up. Your breath doesn't smell that good. And so I go over, I talk to the DJ a little bit. I was asking him for a different song. I wanted to do another one later on. And as I'm getting off the stage, the guy threatens me. And then he follows me off stage. I stop, I turn. He threatens me again. I said, dude, I am too old to get in a barroom fight. I said, I'm 52 years old. I'm not fighting you. And so I walk outside to get my Copenhagen. And the next thing you know, he goes over to the table where my friends are at. Because one of my other friends knew him from work. He was an acquaintance from work. He worked in a different department, but they knew each other. And he was there by himself that night, from our understanding. So the next thing you know, he takes a swig of beer, and you could tell he's thinking, all right, this guy just insulted me or something. I don't know. And then he follows me outside. And I try to come back in, and he tries to do that bully boy stuff with his hands in his pockets. And a guy in the video, one of the guys he didn't know out there, his buddy, Jason, who was the other one that attacked me, tried to introduce him to another guy in there. You hear about it in the book. You see it on the video. He tried to introduce him to him. He refused to shake his hand because his eyes were locked on me. And then when I came up, he was blocking my entrance. He wouldn't let me in.
Well, and I mean, there was a physical altercation at that point, right?
Well, at first I go, what is your problem? He goes, I'm going to teach you respect. That's all he said. And I said, you're not teaching me. I said, I'm walking in that bar, and I'm going to have a good time with my family, or in that restaurant. Walking in there, and I had my Copenhagen in my left hand, and I pointed in that door, and I tried to walk around him, and he did that thing. He got in front of me and shoved me with his shoulders with his hand in his pocket. And I looked at him. I said, dude, this is not kindergarten. So I walk around the other way, and I get around him because I move a little bit faster. Even though I'm 63 and 52 at that time, I'm still a little spry. I can still boogie. I get around him, and I'm almost in the door, and then I feel his hand grab hold of my side. Now, that night, I weighed 169.
Okay.
Right? He weighed 267.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's much bigger over me. He was about 6 inches. He was 6'3", 6'2", 6'3", and I'm 5'9 and a half. If I get on the inversion table, I'm 5'10 again. and he lifts me up and swings me 180 degrees out of the door head first into a cinder block wall. I come up, and the next thing you know, the bouncer, Albert, comes out. It's a supposed bouncer, security, whatever you want to call him, and he gets between us, and he says, you guys are friends. Stop it. I said, we ain't friends. The next thing you know, I get hit across the side of the head. And I'm like, dude, what is your problem? And he goes, stop it. And I said, I want this guy thrown out of here, because I knew Arizona law. You start a fight, you're out of there. You actually, literally, Arizona law says you start a fight in an establishment, a public establishment like this, you literally, the security has 5 minutes to get them off the premises.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't taken a punch yet. I haven't done anything. And I go, I'm going back in there, get my wife, my belongings. I'm going home. His exact words to me were, you're not going back in there, and that bitch is mine.
Ooh.
And he was wearing a shirt that night that says, and he had already hit on her. My wife had already told me about it, that he had already hit on her. He had hit on every woman on there, and he wore a shirt that night that said, certified cougar hunter, don't go on a trophy coug hunt without your morning wood. Real classy. Oh,
classy guy.
Yep. And I warned him. I said, listen, I'm armed, which is in accordance with Arizona law. Defensive display of a firearm. And he says, get your effing gun. And I said, okay. So I walked back to my car, came back up, and you're DEA. All right. He was not blocking the door, but he was right next to the door. All right. Would you expose your back and walk through that door with him standing right there?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. So I stopped short with my weapon down by my side, just like the, Arizona 13-421, that's the law for your listeners, states to do. I pointed my left hand at him and said, don't F with me. I'm going back in that building, get my wife and my belongings, and I'm leaving. Before my left arm could get down, he attacked me again.
And you got a gun in your right hand.
And I got a gun. I had a Ruger SP-101 357 snub nose with hollow points.
Okay.
Stupid man.
You're not kidding. bringing a fist fight to a gunfight. That's a joke, everybody.
Yeah.
That's so from there, how did this, you ended up on the ground, right? Cause his buddy jumped in.
He fell. And then he had hold of my left hand. He lost his footing. He was so drunk. He lost his footing, fell in between the double doors, right in the doorway. And I fell forward on his chest. He had hold of my arm, but I was able to push off of his shoulder blade here with my hand, but he still wouldn't let go. And so I took the weapon, and luckily when I went through the proceedings, they didn't see this. Anyway, I'll just say his buddy grabbed me from behind. Y'all got to read the book to hear about that part. Right. His buddy pulled a buck knife, grabbed me from behind and pulled me down to the ground. He held onto my left arm and followed me on top. His buddy, also about 6'3", 6'4", also 250 to 300 pounds. Jason had me down on the ground. I'm on my back. He's got me not in a chokehold, but pretty close to it. My arm's there. He's got hold of my right arm now, and he's squeezing it with all your force. And I know you guys learned this in the police. You put that much force on those two bones in your forearm, that forces your hand to close. Mm-hmm. All right. As I came down on the ground, that's when we were in that melee. He is pulling on my forearm so tight it was breaking. I actually got it. It did break. It did a hairline fracture contusion where it split the bone.
Wow.
That's how much force he was putting on it. And he shoved it and he had it pulled up into his belly. And at that point, all right, if they get this gun for me, which is what they were trying to do, I'm going to die. This thing has reached an elevation where I don't have a choice. And my last words to him were, this is going to suck for both of us.
Right. Right. And then, so what happened?
Well, the weapon went off.
As I read it, it doesn't indicate who pulled the trigger. That's still undetermined. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
And the bullet struck who?
It struck him. In the belly, came out his shoulder. Ryan Height.
Okay. And somewhere along the line, the bouncer jumped in there, didn't he?
No. Not till the end when he started directing everything and he's trying to call the police. As soon as that round went off and that guy got off of me, my friends came out. The other guy was still trying to attack me. He kneed me once in the back. Up here in the upper part of the rib cage in the back right here. And then my friends got out there and they got him off of me and I wasn't letting go of the gun. And then finally my wife grabbed both sides of my face. She said, you can let go of the gun. I'm here. And I said, okay. And, cause my adrenaline was going through the roof.
Absolutely. I can understand.
Yeah. And those words to her calmed me. And that's when the bouncer said, gave the gun to the other guy and said, take it over there and unload it. They got me up. Somebody was given, I think it was a guy by the name of Josh was over there giving first aid to Ryan, the guy that started the whole thing.
Right.
And I sat down up against the wall, and then the police showed up within five, maybe 10 minutes. I stood up. They put handcuffs on me and put me in the back of the car.
All right. I don't mean to laugh, but damn. One thing I do want to ask you, did anybody ever advise you of your constitutional rights before you were asked questions?
No.
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 Okay.
And the police officer admitted that in the preliminary hearing that he forgot to. The one thing I'll say about Detective Torres, all right, he may have been incompetent, but he was honest. I'll give him that. He was honest, you know, because he admitted that he, I mean, you got to be honest when you're willing to get on the stand as a police officer in a preliminary hearing and you tell the attorney that you don't know the self-defense laws in Arizona yet. And that's not your job. That's the job of the attorneys and the judges. Yet right. You have the power to arrest people. To your listeners out there, I was shocked when he admitted that he did not know those laws.
Yeah, because there are elements, and you know this, but for our listeners that don't know it, there's elements of every crime that have to be met before you can charge somebody with that crime. So does correct. He have to be able to know it well enough to argue it in court? No, but he should be familiar with what the law is.
Correct. Wow. And in Arizona in 2004, we went from being an affirmative defense state to a justification defense state. That's the law that had changed 10 years earlier that he was unaware of, one of many. But that was the first one. And for your listeners out there that don't understand the difference, an affirmative defense simply means that if you claim self-defense, and this is in, we'll use California as an example. You, as the defendant, have to prove that it was self-defense. They're still going to charge you. In Arizona, they got tired of people getting charged when people broke into their homes or came onto their property, vandalizing their property, and they shot somebody, and they're charged with it, a crime. And so Arizona decided, you know, you're justified to defend your life, your family, and your property. And so they passed the justification defense law, and how that changed our entire self-defense system was it basically says, yes, did I shoot him? Yes, but I was justified. In the law, it reads that the prosecution has to prove that it wasn't self-defense.
Yeah, it kind of changes the burden of proof.
Correct. It put it all on the prosecutor, and he ignored it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit. They didn't even photograph your injuries when they brought you into jail, did they?
Nope.
So now you're in jail. You get out on bond. You got to get an attorney. The way that the typical judicial process moves forward and I think every state, because this is part of the Fifth Amendment of our U.S. Constitution, is what we call a grand jury. And that's where a prosecutor goes in and presents. Here's what's supposed to happen. The prosecutor goes in and presents all the facts, exculpatory as well as inculpatory statements, evidence, laying everything. Yep. That's exculpatory evidence is stuff that may be in favor of the defendant that you're trying to get an indictment on, where inculpatory is that's the stuff that you're using against him. That's, you know, you got good evidence there.
Exactly.
They're supposed to present all of that to a grand jury and then let them make an independent decision on whether this person should move forward through the judicial proceedings or they don't think there's enough evidence to convict somebody. So they dismiss it.
Yeah. Okay. May I add to that?
Sure. Go ahead.
In Arizona, they're also supposed to present all the laws that could pertain to this case, whether they think it's going to pertain to it or not. They are supposed to present them all. And their actual title, when a prosecutor goes in to a grand jury is not supposed to be prosecutor. It's supposed to be minister of justice. Very key word. A prosecutor is supposed to wear two hats, minister of justice first, then prosecution.
Okay. So they, and here's my experience as 38 years as a cop, and I've been retired since 2013. I doubt that it's changed very much, but a grand jury is, and this is Murph's opinion, is more than, is nothing more than a formal proceeding in which, you know, we go in. Sometimes I would get called in as a witness on my cases. Sometimes I didn't, you know, sometimes the prosecutor would just take care of it. But in federal court, my last 26 years was as a federal agent. It was common to, if you were the case agent, you're the person preferring charges against defendants, that they would bring you in. You don't have to tell the whole story. You just have to tell enough of the story to convince the grand jury that this person committed a crime. If you're aware of exculpatory information, you're supposed to release that to the prosecutor, and then they bring that to the grand jury's attention. Your job as the investigator, as the testifying grand jury investigator, is just to talk about your investigation that led you to believe this person has committed a crime. Now, think about this. Do you think a prosecutor is going to take a case before a grand jury that they think a grand jury is going to say, no, that's not enough evidence? That does happen. But do you think that's common? I haven't met a prosecutor yet that wants to lose a case. Now, I have worked with some unbelievably talented prosecutors that I would trust. I mean, anything in my life I would trust. They're just talented. They're intelligent. They're experienced. They're trustworthy. They have integrity. I don't question that. But I don't think that's what you had here, was it, Barry?
No, not in the least. And for your listeners, when you read the book, Steve keeps saying it went to trial. It actually, technically, it didn't go to trial.
Right.
It got sent back to the grand jury four times. And on the fourth time, the prosecutor got upset and demanded a preliminary hearing, which is a mini trial. So your listeners understand the difference between the two. A grand jury, you bring in up to 16 novice jurors off the street that have no understanding of the law or the circumstances in the case. You present your evidence and the laws, and they determine, is there a 50% chance or greater that this person committed a crime for it to get turned over to go to trial? In a preliminary hearing, instead of a grand jury coming in, it's like a mini trial where the judge and the prosecution and defense are able to present their evidence. And then the judge makes a determination whether it goes to trial or not, with 12 jurors to determine your guilt or innocence. In my case, it went to the preliminary hearing. We didn't even have to put on a defense. All my attorney did was use the video to cross-examine everybody, and the judge dismissed the case 6 hours into a three-day planned preliminary hearing. That's how much the video countered everything that the prosecution had tried to put on in front of the grand jury. And the prosecution refused to show the exculpatory evidence, even though he was required to by law. Right. Not once, not twice, not three times, but four times. He didn't even try to use the video until over halfway through his presentation in the preliminary hearing. Yet he had it for over 2 years. It just blows my mind.
It does anybody that's been involved in law enforcement. And your attorney was submitting what we call Trabus letters, which is a request to the prosecutor to allow you, the potential defendant, or the defendant in this case, to talk to the grand jury and let them ask you questions. Yeah. I have never seen that in my entire career.
Yep. He told me, and for your listeners that don't know, my attorney, his name was Michael Kimmer. You can look him up. He was one of the two attorneys that got Miranda through the Supreme Court in 69.
A little bit of experience there.
Yeah. And he said, I've never felt comfortable doing this, Barry, but I feel comfortable with you. Now, I will tell you, he rehearsed me, and he put me in front of some people that were brutal on me when I did the three practice grand juries before I went in there, I mean, they were absolutely brutal on me. But it was good. And you got to understand, folks, in a grand jury, there is no judge. There is no defense. And my attorney felt comfortable enough to put me in there on the third grand jury. But then the prosecution convinced the grand jurors that they didn't need to hear from me.
Jeez.
I'm like,
you can't make this up.
Yeah. And in a grand jury, you can't, you have to answer the questions.
Right.
You have no defense in there protecting you. Right. They could have asked me any question. Have I ever fooled around on my wife? Have I ever done anything? I would have had to answer it or pled the fifth.
Right. And a prosecutor, a real prosecutor would not allow things like that to happen if it's not directly related to the case. But I don't think we could say that about this particular guy.
Yeah, but the fact that he didn't even let me in there.
And when he agreed to it, he would.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, and I apologize for keep calling it a trial. I know it's a preliminary hearing. I have never seen or even heard of a preliminary hearing like what you went through, because it was a trial.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And the funny thing was, is that for your listeners, when you read the book, my lead investigator, Mike McLaughlin, he's actually a great guy. He actually made so much money off of me in this thing. He was able to buy a bar down here called Sage and Sands.
Does he have a karaoke machine?
He has karaoke come in there. Yeah, he does. But I don't go there anymore. I go there early in the evening. I might have a drink with him just because we're buds. But he told me that morning, he goes, Barry, he goes, I've been doing this for 20 years. He said, I'm going to tell you right now, this is not like Perry Mason. It's not like Matlock or anything you see on TV. These things are very dry and there's a lot of legal stuff in there and all that. I said, okay, I got you, brother. When the case was dismissed, we get outside. He looks at me because there are so many crazy things that happened during this preliminary hearing. And I remember you saying earlier, you thought this was going to be boring. It's not boring at all. It's hilarious. It's so sad that we had to take it to that level, but it's hilarious because of the incompetence or the malicious prosecution of the prosecutor against me was so evident. It was absurd. And he comes out and he goes, you know what I said at the beginning? He goes, only you, Barry, could make it like a Perry Mason or Matlock freaking show.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, did the victim, the supposed victim, the guy that received the bullet, did he testify in that preliminary hearing?
No, he refused to testify. He says he doesn't remember anything. He didn't remember anything after he was playing darts. And we looked at the videos. He was playing darts literally 45 minutes before he attacked me. 45 to 50 minutes before he attacked me on the video. And that means he had drank so much, because he was putting them back, that he had blacked out. And see, people think when you black out, you're still awake. Or, I mean, you're asleep. No. When you black out, you're functioning, but your mind's not working.
Right. You're still conscious.
Yes.
Okay. So, you touched on the, stand your ground law in Arizona. And first of all, everybody, just, I mentioned this in yesterday's episode, neither Barry or I are attorneys. What we're getting ready to talk about is based on Barry's experience, both of our researches on the stand your ground laws in Arizona and Florida, because I live in Florida. So don't take what we're getting ready to talk about as legal advice. You've got to do the research yourself. You find out what the laws are in your state, because each state has its own little variation of it. A lot of them are very similar, yep. But we're not here saying this is the God's honest truth. This is our Barry and Murph's interpretation of the research we've done. Okay. So just going to put that disclaimer out there, because the last thing either one of us need to happen is that if somebody listens to this episode and decides they're an expert on the stand your ground law and gets themselves in a bind.
Yep.
So having said that, let's get over here. Now, Arizona is somewhat different than Florida. I think supposedly Texas has about the toughest stand your ground laws anywhere in the United States. They're kind of known for that, where it's more protective of the person that's being attacked, which I think that's the way it should be quite honest with you. But here in Florida, we're pretty good. We've done away with the duty to retreat, which means that if somebody's threatening me. So when I was a cop in West Virginia back in the 70s, we would put on handgun safety classes for the public. And they would come, we'd have about a 3 or 4 hour class there at City Hall. We'd have the prosecuting attorney or an assistant come in, explain the legalities. We went through weapons, and then we would take the people to the range, and they got to spend several hours on the range with their handgun. And we were all certified firearms instructors, and just teach people how to safely handle a weapon and what their rights are within their own house. Because where should you feel the safest in your life? It should be in your house. Well, at that time, West Virginia had a law, which just the first time I heard this flabbergasted me, is if somebody broke into my house, I'm required by state law to retreat to the furthest point in my house until I can retreat no further before I can employ deadly force against a person. Unless you're facing imminent bodily harm or death, and you don't have enough time to retreat. Well, thank God that's changed. So I think it's 39 states now. Let me pull up this other document here, because I did do a little research on this, Barry.
Oh, that's awesome.
There are 39 states now that have adopted the stand your ground laws that are, they're similar. And I'm gonna go through the states here in a minute. But you are not required to retreat. But then there's always little variations in the different states, okay? There's also some requirements. So, you know, you got to remember, this is not a stand your ground law is not a free pass for you. You can still be arrested and charged with a crime.
Yep.
The use of force has to be proportionate to the threat. So if somebody says, I'm going to throw an egg on your house, you can't shoot them for that. You know,
I disagree with you.
Do you?
110%.
It might be like that. It might be like that in Arizona, but
yeah, but throwing an egg on a house is one thing. But see, the prosecutor tried to use that in my case, saying, yeah, Mr. Todd didn't have to go back and get a weapon. Well, no, I didn't have to, but I was legally allowed to.
Well, plus you needed to go in and get your wife.
Yeah. But then he said, well, what he did, what's that term? An example. He goes, you know, somebody comes up and punches you in the arm, and then you throw a hand grenade in there. And my attorney's point was, is that the law in Arizona does not say that. All right. In a lot of states, it does. It makes no sense to me. Now, in the example that you used, I totally get it. But that could skew a jury to say, well, yeah, what he did was no different than throwing an egg on it. Well, unless you're in that situation, you don't know. Because hindsight's always 20/20.
Well, and so here's the reasonable fear standard that most states recognize, and that's the justification for using force, including deadly force, rests on the individual's reasonable belief that it's necessary for self-defense or defense of others. Okay. Now, I just want to mention quickly the states that still have that requirement to retreat. They include Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, which that's kind of a surprise, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Nebraska, New Jersey, New York, and Rhode Island. Okay, so if you're listening from any of those states, you have a duty to retreat. You got to let people, for lack of a better word, they have the ability to take advantage of you and put you in fear for your life before you can respond. Let's see here.
That was another thing that they brought up in Arizona. The prosecutor brought up in my case. Was that, well, Mr. Todd wasn't in fear for his life. He was a ranger. He knew how to handle himself in a fight and all that. And my attorney's point was, yeah, but he wasn't taught to maim people.
Right.
All right. All right. That's number one. Number two, he shouldn't have to do that. Right. He shouldn't even have to. And how he chose to defend himself is his right as an American. And that was my attorney's point. And, you know, there's so many, and they are, you're so right, Steve, that laws are so different. I'm going to promote an app here that I've been using even before my shooting happened. And it's called the CCW app. My wife and I both have it on our phones. Okay. It looks like this right here. This is what it looks like when you open it. When you close it, it looks like that right there, that little American flag with a handgun on it, CCW. Okay. And this thing updates regularly. You have to pay $80 a year, but it keeps you totally updated on the state law. So whenever my wife and I, because we're licensed now in 41 states, whenever we cross a state line that we're licensed in, we look up the laws. Like a lot of people think in Arizona that you can't be drinking in a bar and have a gun. That's not true. You know, that's hogwash. All right. And you know, some people say, well, if you're drinking, you shouldn't have a gun. Well, okay, I'm drinking in my house with my wife. We're having wine with our dinner, and now somebody's breaking in. Oh, do I have to say, hey, wait till this gets out of my system? It makes no sense.
Right.
You're still responsible for your actions, and that's the way Arizona looks at it. And the only people that can carry in a bar or in a bar and grill or in a restaurant that serves alcohol in Arizona concealed is if they have a CCW. They can carry anywhere else in the state, but they want you to be trained on licenses if you're drinking alcohol.
Right. Now, and so here in Florida, you know, it explicitly states in the law that there is no duty to retreat before using force, even deadly force, in a place where one is legally present there. It's legal for you to be in that location.
Yep. That's what it says in Arizona.
Now here's one thing it's the big difference, I think, between Florida and Arizona is the pretrial immunity. So Florida's law includes a provision for a pretrial immunity hearing, which can act as a hurdle for prosecutors in holding individuals accountable. And this immunity hearing, the burden of proof rests on the prosecution to prove, which it does in a criminal trial as well, but it's only at a preponderance of the evidence. And there's three levels of burden of proof, and a preponderance of the evidence is the lowest level. Okay.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
That's pretty cool.
And let's see, the defense of property, the use of deadly force is not permitted solely for the defense of property. But the judge in this immunity hearing, he has the authority, the charges can be dismissed at that point. And that individual, in this case you would be immune from criminal prosecution down the road for these same charges. That would be it. You know, it's a final decision. In Arizona, I don't think you have that. The legal standard, it's similar to Florida. A person is not required to retreat when facing a threat of death or serious bodily harm and can use force if they believe it is necessary to prevent injury or death. The exceptions and this sounded like a little funny when I first read it, but the self-defense claim cannot be made if the person provokes the confrontation to start with or is involved in illegal activity.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's, and I mentioned that each state has its own little nuances on this. So of these states that still have somewhat of a requirement, they have the duty to retreat. Let me just point these out to you. Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, and Nebraska, no duty to retreat is required in your home or your workplace. So somebody breaks in your house and you feel like they're there to hurt you, if they say, I'm going to kill you and take all your stuff, you can take whatever action you deem necessary. In Delaware, the duty to retreat also does not apply within one's vehicle. I mean, you see now we're experiencing this here in Orlando where these idiots in their hot rods come out and they take over these intersections. And there was an incident where a mom with her two children was blocked in traffic and they came over and attacked her car and they're pounding on her windows. If she'd had a gun, she could have shot them, left them laying in the street, been justified.
Yep.
In New York, retreat is not required if the person is threatened with robbery, kidnapping, or sexual assault. And in Wisconsin and in Washington, D.C., which is a federal district, these jurisdictions take a middle ground approach. Of course they do in D.C. While there is no explicit statutory duty to retreat, a jury may consider whether a person had a safe opportunity to retreat when determining if the use of force was reasonable. Make a decision like the other states have, like these other 39 states have. Here's here are your rights, you know, so that you're not attacked. And Barry, I want to tell you about my neighbor here. And this was just, I don't know, a few months ago. I'm sitting here in my office, which is on the front of my house, working on the podcast. And I get a text from my wife, come out back now, quick. And then I get a second one, call 911. Okay, well, that just escalated things.
A little bit.
Yeah, so I go out back, and my next-door neighbor, who's retired, he's a couple years older than me, love this guy to death. I'm not going to mention his name, but I mean, just he was the first, he and his wife were the first people to welcome us to this neighborhood 4 years ago. We moved in. And he's a big man, and he's a business owner. He's an immigrant to the United States. He's a U.S. citizen. He had a successful business. He's still in very, very good shape. Our property lines here, we live on a small lake. Our property lines actually extend into the water. So we prefer that people don't come and fish behind our houses. You got the whole rest of the freaking lake to fish on. Just don't do it behind our houses, because we all know there's a lot of criminals that are here casing your house to see if anybody's home so they can break in and steal whatever they can steal. So this particular person was here last year. And my neighbor got into it, a verbal altercation back and forth. And I happened to go out and heard what was going on. And the guy came over towards me and I just said, hey, pal, look, our property lines actually do go in the water. You are trespassing. All we're asking is that you just go someplace else and fish. And for whatever reason, he was okay with me. He wasn't okay with the neighbor. He went his way. Well, he comes back this year. By the time I got out there, he had gotten into my neighbor's wife's face, calling her names. They're both black, and the guy that's here illegally is using the N-word with her. I don't appreciate that. I think that's extremely disrespectful, but the fact that he's challenging an older lady, that's extremely disrespectful.
Yep.
So the husband comes out. He doesn't say a word. He just goes and gets his water hose and sprays the guy. Now, there's a black wrought iron fence between them. This kid jumps the fence and attacks my neighbor. Okay. Finally, my neighbor loses his footing. He gets back up. They break apart. The guy jumps back across the fence. And by the time I get out there, what I'm hearing is, I'm going to come back and kill you. I'm going to kill you and your whole family, and I'm going to kill your neighbors. And so I've got 911 on the phone. They send four deputies out here. We have cameras in the back of our house. So my neighbor told him about what happened. He omitted the part about spraying him with the water hose. Okay. Well, that's considered an assault. Spraying somebody with a water hose.
You got to be kidding me.
According to the
deputy. And he's illegally on your property.
Well, see, they're looking at him as provoking the attack. And you're right. The guy is illegal on our property, because we went and got a copy of our deed and showed the deputies our property line does go into the water. So what happened was they ended up issuing a citation for trespassing. But what happens is if he comes back in our neighborhood, he can be taken to jail. And he, of course, his mommy came. He called mommy to come out. He's 26 years old, called mommy to come out here and protect him. So we're talking to the deputies out front, and they're explaining to my neighbor what happened. He said, wait a minute. So you're telling me that guy jumps the fence and attacks me, and if I'd had a gun, I could have shot him and killed him right there, and everything's good. But yet because I sprayed him with a water hose, that I provoked the attack, and yep. you could have potentially put me in jail? And he's looking at me like, what kind of laws are these? So it's just, that's what I say. You guys have got to research your own state to know what your rights are, so you don't end up in a situation like Barry did here. And I want to get back to your story here, Barry, because you mentioned how much your attorney cost, which I think has gone up since I read your book. So your attorney fees were, what, over $400,000?
Yeah, it was close to $400,000, but you got to understand, my firm and I were registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. It cost my firm another over a quarter of a million dollars to clear my name and get the record sealed, because this is a rule by the Securities and Exchange Commission. If you are ever charged with a felony, you have to disclose that on all your disclosures form to every client in the company, everything. You have to disclose it everywhere.
Right.
All right. And so for us, that's wrong, because it didn't even have anything to do with my industry. And one, I was never convicted of anything. I was charged. So even after I got cleared, I still had to put on there that I was charged with attempted murder and 2 counts of aggravated assault. And it took me 5.5 years to get that cleared and get the record sealed. So, because the narrative had already been written by the media. Now that the record's been sealed and the judge put this in the order when he sealed it, that I was wrongfully indicted or otherwise charged, and anybody that says false information about this case in any way, shape, or form and has knowledge of it being sealed, I can hold them and sue them.
Right.
Right. Good. Yeah. So now I'm writing the narrative and educating the American public. And the reason I wrote the book was to educate, and also the profits from the book are going to a foundation that my wife and I started called the Defense Resources Foundation. And we want to get money into people's hands before they go to trial. My legal team is part of the board, and they have created a vetting system for them to, so the money's not going to some crazy person that was on drugs. It's going, every case that's put in for assistance is going to be vetted. But we need to stop this. You know, Daniel Penny, the New York subway kid, right, that was the Marine, that is a perfect example of a grand jury run amok. Everybody saw that the week that it happened. It should have never gone to trial. You know that Alvin Bragg, Steve, never showed those videos from the social media or gave the witness statements to that grand jury. Because if he had, that kid would have never gone to trial.
Right.
But instead, right, prosecutors are elected in this country, Steve. And when they're elected, they have to go with their constituents. And I'm not a race man at all, but Alvin Bragg's constituents are majority black. The man that died 5 minutes after Penny let him go and the police showed up, he died. He was black and Penny was white. So he was elected. So the pressure is on him to do it. But now, because he got it through the grand jury and let it go to trial, he can say, oh, it wasn't me.
Right.
So, and that's a perfect example of a lack of honor. Alvin Bragg has no honor, and there's tons of this stuff going on throughout the country. Look at what happened to Trump. You know, 91 felony charges. Are you kidding me? This is freaking absurd. And they still haven't gotten him on any of them. Because the ones that they did get him on, we all know it's all going to be thrown out. It's all crap.
Well, going back to the financial thing, I mean, when that word gets out that you've been charged with attempted murder, I got to tell you right now, you are not somebody I would want to handle my money. So what I'm saying is, did it destroy your business?
No, it didn't. We did not lose one client.
Wow. But did you pick up new clients?
Yes.
What was so out of everything combined, lost wages, you had to deplete your retirement accounts, your lawyer's fees, everything was involved. What do you estimate the value of money lost from your business and you personally?
Is that with time in the market or just at that time period when it happened?
At that time, not including future
close
earnings.
Close to $750,000.
But including your business, I think in your book you came out, you said there's a total of approximately $8 million.
That was lost earnings. And that was over 10 years at an average annualized rate of return of about 8 or 10% or something like that, even though my average annualized rate of return is a little bit over 20% per year. I was very conservative because people would say, you got over 20% per year? Yeah, I do. You know, they tell you that, but I do.
Well, that's a good investment firm.
Exactly. It is what it is.
It is. It is.
It's, no, and I'm not doing the Pelosi thing. I have no insider information.
And so this cleared up. It took over 2 years for this to get all straightened out, right?
Yep. 26 months, 17 days to get the criminal done. And then I didn't get my record cleared until June of 2021. So literally the whole thing took from March 1st, 2014 till June of 2021.
Was that prosecutor ever reelected?
He retired. And then, unfortunately, they brought him back to supervise other prosecutors. Jeez. Yeah. And yet I've met with the mayor. He wanted me to meet with the police chief, which has not happened yet. He said he wanted to make changes here to this because he heard me give a speech at a 4th of July thing a few years ago, gave me a city coin and all. Oh, great, great, great. And then we had lunch and I said, well, you need to start teaching honor. You need to start teaching people that we're a republic, not a democracy. They need to stop interpreting these laws the way they want to interpret them and start interpreting them the way they're written. We don't teach what a republic stands for anymore. It means the people, the law. We tell everybody we're a democracy. Well, we're not a democracy. You won't find democracy in anywhere in the Constitution or any of the state constitutions. We're a constitutional republic, which means individual liberty. But anyway, I digress. Sorry, started going down a rabbit hole. That's okay. But anyway, that still hasn't happened. I'm sad about that. I really like our mayor. I think he's a good man, but I also think that politicians waffle. They don't want to take a stand and hold people accountable. One of the things I'm trying to do, I'm going to look into this law you just told me about in Florida. I'm going to start working. I'm working with my attorneys to get in front of our state legislatures because I've been involved in the GOP here. I want them to start not only look at that law, but the thing I've been thinking about is because I know that the prosecutors have a hard job. I got it. All right. And I want to help you. But at the same time, there needs to be some accountability both ways. All right. And what I was looking at doing was in the state of Arizona, having because that's one of the things I want our foundation to do is start help change, either add some new laws or change some. But every time someone is found not guilty for self-defense. All right. Or they were identified as being wrongfully indicted or otherwise charged like I was. That the state should have to pay back every dime. I guarantee you hurt somebody's pocketbook, that stuff will stop.
It's when you get their attention.
That's right. That's right. Because people don't understand, when you have a whole state using all the resources of the taxation that they put on the individual citizen against you, that's like an unbelievable mountain of pressure. You have no clue the pressure that you're under. I mean, thank God in our Lord Jesus Christ, my faith in him, my family that supported me, my clients, my friends, and just as important is the discipline, determination, and belief in myself that I confidence in myself that I got from my Ranger training throughout my military days. I would not have been able to make it through it. It was the most mentally excruciating experience I've ever been through. I've had two people die in my arms in my life. One was in the Korea DMZ, and the other one was my brother in 2021. And that wasn't even as hard as going through that 26 months of hell.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you hadn't had the financial resources, just think about how much more devastating that could have been. I mean, it could wipe people out completely.
Oh, it does. That's why. And all these other companies out there, unless it's a big name story like Daniel Penny or something, that some foundation will come in and help them. There's tons of people that are being convicted and wrongfully so, just like you talked about earlier. And the justice system isn't right, and it is the best in the world, but I still think we can make it better. I still think and we need to get the resources in the hands of these people that are wrongfully indicted before they're convicted. Because getting a case expunged and then overturned is much more difficult than getting them the resources beforehand to help them put up a strong defense. And these public defenders in these states, they aren't paid as much as prosecutors. They don't give them the resources. Over here in Yuma County, we got 16 public defenders and they get 10 hours a month from an investigator that they contract out for the whole team.
Wow.
10 hours a month. If they want more, they have to petition the court, where a prosecutor has a whole damn police force. It makes no sense.
And laboratories and everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah, they got the FBI at their disposal. They got all kinds of stuff. I mean, they could have very easily sent the videos that I had to the FBI, to their lead video forensics expert. And the funny thing is, and you read it in the book, one of the police officers who was their video guy, a week later, he went through the videos and everything we were claiming, he put in his report. But I had already been charged and already run through the ringer in the newspaper. So you know that the prosecution was not going to let that go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Our media. Anything to sensationalize a topic, whatever it is, and bring in more advertising dollars. That's what that's all about.
Exactly.
So, and our regular listeners, they've heard me again, gave out that disclaimer, but, you know, please do your own research and make up your own mind. Don't let the media, don't let me, don't let Barry, don't let anybody tell you what to think. God gave you a brain. Yeah. Use your brain. You decide what's true and what's not true.
Yeah. And anything that you hear that comes out of a grand jury, especially if it's somebody you know or somebody that's never had any issues with the police before, take it with skepticism. And it doesn't, because this is not a red and blue issue, conservative or liberal. This is an American issue. We need to get back to the days, Steve, where you are presumed innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. And the underlying system has been turned upside down. And I believe it started in the 70s and 80s when we had a lot of crime and the drugs, and they put a lot of laws in place. Never been convicted of a crime in my life. Folks, they put a $500,000 cash only bond on me. $500,000 cash only. It completely wiped me out, and I had to borrow some money.
Yeah.
All right. It was absurd. And then they turn around and they put me on pretrial services. Okay. Let me tell you what pretrial services are, folks. All right. That's probation. You actually go into a probation office and report in to a probation officer who's the new kid on the block. Mine was Diego, great young man. And then they took away my weapons. I wasn't allowed to drink alcohol. I had to go through the courts to request travel, even for business. And then they turn around and once a month I would be called on the night before and have to go in and have some 21-year-old watch me hold my chili whacker while I peed in a bottle. All right. Not convicted of anything.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, we're here at the end, Barry, and it's horrible, you know. Please don't accept this, everybody, as every prosecutor is like this guy that Barry was up against, because they're not. Most of them are law abiding. They've earned the position that they're in. They want justice done. They want the right thing to happen. You know, they're not out to get people, especially innocent people. So, you know, we're not complaining about law enforcement. We're not complaining about prosecutors. We're complaining about one specific incident here. Okay. So this is not Barry and Murph are not down in law enforcement and prosecute the justice system. But here at the end, you just gave, I think you've already answered this, but I just want to give you one more opportunity about any final thoughts about, you know, what you've experienced or what others should consider before potentially having to go through the same thing.
Number one, make sure you have insurance. Know the laws in your state, like you and I have talked about throughout this entire 2 hours, Steve. Know the laws. Yep. Before you cross a state line, read up on the laws. It doesn't take that long, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes. If you're driving across state lines or you're flying there, know what the laws are. That's number one. Number two, get insurance. Get something. I had insurance and I dropped it. I'm not going to, nobody's going to attack me holding a weapon. I'll just use the legal display of a firearm in Arizona. I'll be fine. Da, 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 da. Not thinking that somebody would actually attack me holding a firearm. And number three, if you ever find yourself in this position, remember, just like your doctor, just like your financial advisor, just like your CPA, don't take their word for being gospel. I'm talking about your legal team. All right. My legal team had some things wrong and I had to challenge them on it. All right. And I won it. And my attorney actually admitted that he skipped a step. And this is the same guy that got Miranda through the Supreme Court. All right. So you are your own best advocate.
Always.
All right. Always. And know the law and hold those people accountable for their job. I mean, The first two investigators I had, I fired them both in less than 2 weeks. They were incompetent. I was spending money that was incompetent. As you read in the book, Steve, it's pretty crazy. And lastly, please help out our foundation. Go out, buy the book, go to our website, standyourgroundbook.com. That's standyourgroundbook.com. You can pick it up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Dorrance Publishing. You can get it in audio, ebooks, hardback, softback. And if you're so obliged, go out and donate to our foundation. It's called DefenseResourcesFoundation.org. Let us start helping all Americans get in front of this and start protecting the freedoms that our founding fathers gave their lives for.
Well said. Well said. And folks, you can find Barry here on Instagram at Barry D. Todd, as well as Stand Ground Book on Facebook at Barry D. Todd. On X, Barry D. Todd. LinkedIn, Barry D. Todd CHFC, I think it is. And are you on TikTok?
Yeah. Stand Your Ground Book is.
Okay. So yeah. If you want information, his website, he told you, standyourgroundbook.com. You've seen it here on the screen. I'll tell you, I was skeptical to start with, but I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. So Amen. I've got to put the story out, whether it's me being a brother of that brotherhood within law enforcement, we still want the truth out. Exactly. You heard me say time and time again here, nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop, and that includes the incompetent cops. If you're not going to do the job, please go find another occupation. We got enough people making us look bad as it is.
Yep. So, and God bless all of you.
Yeah, absolutely. God, and protect. And Barry, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show to share your story. I know this is a horrible event for you to have to go through, especially your family on top of everything else. The fact that they're all standing beside you and they're still with you today is a testament to their love and support for you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming back every week. Check out Barry's book. Again, that's standyourgroundbook.com. It's a book like I've never read before. So until next week, I'm going to try and figure out why you keep coming back every week, but I know why you keep coming back. It's because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all, and that's the game of crimes. God bless everybody. See you next week.